Hey, this is Francis.
This is Jake.
And this is Stephanie.
And we are Caustic Casanova, and you're listening to Diary of Doom.
Diary of Doom.
Diary of Doom.
What's going on, botanists? This is the latest entry in the Diary of Doom as we look back on the rich history of doom metal and its sister sounds based on the recounted tales of its fanatics. Every week, we'll have a different guest to spin their yarn. You can follow us on Instagram at Diary of Doom, like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Diary of Doom, and subscribe and listen to the podcast on SoundCloud that will probably be changing with some other locations pretty soon. And if you have a question, want to pitch something, or just feel like giving me shit, you can fire off an email to diaryofdoom1968@gmail.com. Also, please visit the website, www.diaryofdoom.com. With all that bullshit out of the way, I'd like to welcome three guests. I think this is the most guests that's been on the show in a single period of time, so we can scratch that off. We've got out of the D.C. area, or specifically D.C., correct me if I'm wrong, Caustic Casanova. Previously saw this crew at the Day of Doom Festival showcase, very long day, that Magnetic Eye Records put on. So why don't you all say hello?
Hello.
Hello.
Quite literally. So We've got Francis, we've got Steph, and we've got Jake. And there's a fourth member in the band, Andrew. Andrew is not with us for this period of time. And they're all calling out from their commune down in Washington, D.C.
Yes.
So how you guys doing? How's it been since I saw you guys roll through Brooklyn last year?
We are pretty good. That was like the first show for our like final three weeks of touring, basically for the whole like summer, fall area. So after that, we went on a 3-week tour of the South, and we've been back since then.
Was the Southern trip more exciting than the other tour?
Well, I wouldn't say it was more exciting or less exciting. It was different. It was a lot shorter, and it was South, so we were anticipating warm weather. But it was funny because we basically followed a cold front down the entire time. I think when we were loading out in Charleston, it was supposed to be temporarily like 75 degrees. It was about 30 degrees when we were loading out. And that was sort of a theme for that whole tour. It was always a lot colder than it was supposed to be.
We played a show outdoors on a stage, and it was so cold. It was in Texas. And that was like one of the last shows, if not the last show on the tour. And we were like layered up on the stage. It was crazy.
Yeah, I saw some footage from the Levitation Festival, which a ton of bands that I'm a fan of played. And I was like, wow, they're all bundled up. It must be fucking cold in Texas.
Yeah, it's really cold.
Yeah, it wasn't just like a cold front. It was like a 30 degrees, you know, Fahrenheit colder than normal front. So, I mean, it was like really, really, really uncomfortable for a lot of it.
A lot of it were record lows, too, for these like places.
Yeah, in Charleston, I think that was a record low.
Wow, that's crazy. So obviously you've been on the road. You had an album out last year, God How I Envy the Deaf. I was about to say the death, but I correct
a lot of people make that mistake.
That's what happens.
All right, so I'm not the only one. But leading up to that, you guys have a very interesting blend of music that I don't know, and you know, feel free to correct me. I don't know how exactly, like, maybe it worked for you guys, but you guys seem to get like lumped into like a doom metal category. But I wouldn't call you guys like a strictly doom metal band. I actually hear a ton of different sounds in your music. Everything from, I should have grabbed the sticky note that I wrote down at work before I started listing them off, or I could have said something as ridiculous as like polka. But you guys do like a big mashup of like, I hear like surf rock and like punk rock, all of the Ramones and psych rock, in some like reggae and post-punk. So where are you guys like pulling all this from? And like, how did that eventually lead to you guys getting together and forming the band? It was a very long-winded way of saying, who influenced you and why are you in a band?
Yes.
Well, I mean, all of that stuff that you just said is correct, I think. I mean, I can't remember the last time I was influenced by the Ramones or reggae per se, but like all of that's, you know, all of that stuff is in there. All of that stuff is in there at some point, you know, definitely punk rock, definitely post-punk and definitely prog rock and
psychedelic
rock, definitely surf rock. Like all of that stuff is definitely, you know, a part of the DNA of this band, but we have just had this, Stephanie and I have been in this band for a long time together. We've been playing music together for 15 years and we've never had any rules about what Costa Casanova is supposed to be really. And, you know, that doesn't suit this band or like, that's not appropriate for this band really isn't a sentence that we say. And maybe the only thing that over the years we've sort of narrowed it down is that it sort of has to be heavy. And that's really our only guiding
light. But dynamic, like heavy yet dynamic, I would say.
I think that makes sense. Not
just an assault of noise for the sake of being loud. Thoughtful noise.
Yeah.
I think that's 100%, like that's a great way to describe it. But I find it very refreshing because sometimes, yes, I love riffs and I love it, but sometimes, you know, occasionally gets kind of monotonous. So it's really cool when an act like you guys pops up and really sort of spins the genre on their head and you're hearing all these other influences and people dig it. You know, it's not just like us. You guys seem to have like a pretty far and wide fan base. But so I guess kind of like per the three of you, like if you wanted to talk about like some of who your, you know, major influences were that made you want to be in a band and like, who were some of your favorite acts when you were in the fledgling stages of Costa Casanova?
I guess I'll start. I mean, I remember for me, the band that made me want to be in a band was Thursday, the band Thursday from New Jersey.
Yes.
That was probably the first show that I ever saw, like, you know, going to a legitimate concert venue as a teenager. It was on my 16th birthday. And I had listened to their music before, but I had never really been to like a rock show before. And just being there, I was like thrown into the mosh pit at one point. And I think my friend like tried to put his arm around my shoulder and like drag me back in, but I was kind of feeling it. I had just never really witnessed or just been a part of anything like that. And I had already been playing the drums. So I was like, man, maybe I want to be in a rock band. And I had already been listening to a lot of like post-hardcore stuff. So like At the Drive-In, Glassjaw, Minus the Bear, Coheed and Cambria, those were like a lot of my early influences as a teenager for like wanting to get into music and be in a band. That's pretty much me, but I listen to a lot of different stuff now, but as far as what kind of got me into wanting to be in a band, that's it.
Is there like any band in particular that you're just like, you know, a huge fan of, and you maybe not like, I want to just do what they do, but is there something that reigns supreme for you?
I mean, I really gravitate toward Queens of the Stone Age now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's so many other bands that I'm into. Like, we're all collectively really have gotten into and are newly re-getting into like King Crimson and a lot of the like 70s progressive rock. We all really love Queens of the Stone Age. I particularly love Queens of the Stone Age, but I think everyone would say that too, just because they're an extremely dynamic, weird, heavy rock band like us, even though we sound nothing like them.
Yeah. We all have a different favorite album by Queens as well, probably.
Okay, yeah. So now I'm interested.
Okay, so are we answering that question?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, by all means. What's everyone's favorite Queens of the Stone Age record?
I would probably go self-titled. Yep, that's the one I keep coming back to the most. I think we were actually all having this discussion in the car on the way up to practice today. Like, what is your qualification for a perfect record? And I think someone said, you know, every single song is amazing. You wouldn't skip a single song on it. And for me, yeah, that's Queens of the Stone Age. Queens of the Stone Age.
My answer is that I think Like Clockwork is their best album, but the one that I listen to the most and have listened to the most over my life is Lullabies to Paralyze. Those are my two favorites.
Yes, I mean, I'm very partial to the first album, but as far as things that I've listened to the most with them, I really like the guitar tones on Era Vulgaris, because, like, Josh Homme's idea when he started the band was kind of like, he just wanted to make the sounds of robots making love to each other, like, quote-unquote, right? And that's like, the best way that I can describe Era Vulgaris, just because it's, like, very metallic and robotic, and I'd say, like, for my own playing, in like, personally, that's the one that I would draw from the most, is that record.
Cool.
I was just going to say that we all got, for Heavy Blog is Heavy, we all got to write like little essays that they asked us around the time the record came out. We all wrote essays about albums that really influenced us, and Jake wrote a really cool essay about Era Vulgaris. So check that out, listeners, on Heavy Blog is Heavy. If you look up Costa Casanova, they did a feature called Under the Influence, or The Anatomy of, it's called The Anatomy of Costa Casanova.
Awesome. I've definitely read that article. And my favorite Queen's record is Songs for the Deaf, because I love how
the classic record.
I mean, it is so amazing. Perfect. Like, it's so that's good. And like,
we all love all of them. Yeah.
I think the only one that all of us probably would agree is, like, it's good. It has some good songs on it, but it's like, the weakest. Definitely not favorite materials. They're most recent.
Villains.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, but
there's some great songs on that one too, though. Like, Head Like a Haunted House.
I think Evil Has Landed is like, makes the whole album worth it. That song's really good.
I wasn't crazy about it. I like Clockwork better. I thought that was sort of like a more natural evolution to the band. Villains, I was like, wow, this is like a big band record.
Yeah, basically.
I agree.
Yeah, and that's like my second favorite, definitely. Like, but I mean, I love all of them for different reasons. Like, a huge fan of Rated R. I've just been getting into that record again after not really hearing it for a couple years, and I forgot how much I really like it, you know.
And then there's them, Crooked Vultures. We all really like that record too.
I really like that record a lot too.
Fantastic album, yeah.
And like, obviously, I mean, well, maybe I shouldn't say obviously, but for me, you know, I love Chaos too, and Chaos sort of splintered off and then a bunch of other nonsense happened, but that obviously paved the road for a lot of other bands.
Yeah. Obviously, they're probably the most important, other than Sabbath, probably band in this whole genre.
There was a period in this band, I think, before Jake was in the band, where we were on one tour specifically, like, very frequently compared to Caius, and I didn't really understand why, because we don't really sound like them, but we're definitely influenced by them.
I think people just, like, draw kind of an easy similarity to certain types of music, and sometimes just they're not sure what to say what it is, so they just say it's this. Which is kind of insulting to artists if they're just going, you know, if they are influenced, but it's just like, oh, so we just immediately sound like that. So I could imagine that is like kind of weird, possibly frustrating and annoying.
There are certain bands that are just touchstones for a lot of people and are just shorthand for a lot of different kinds of things. And so I don't think it's appropriate to ever be offended by being compared to Caius. Also, Caius is an amazing band. Yeah. So if someone is saying that you sound like them, I mean, that's phenomenal.
That's not what I meant, by the way.
It's all based on, like,
no. I hear you.
Yeah.
Wasn't trying to suggest that you were offended or anything like that. I just wasn't sure.
I didn't think you were.
No, we just wanted to clarify.
Okay. Francis, where do you draw your influences from?
Oh, okay, yeah. So, well, one thing that I was going to say was, like, when we were talking earlier about, I just wanted to, like, mention this, when we were talking about the sonic diversity of the band and all the weird stuff that we do, and I was thinking when you were asking that question, something that for years we were always, like, the heaviest band on not heavy bills, or the lightest, most bizarre band on really heavy bills, and over the years that, like, it always used to bother me, or I felt less confident because of that. And then as the years went on, it became something empowering. And a point of pride. And I feel like now a lot of that stuff is dovetailed to where we're excited more than anything to be the most out there band, like on the Day of Doom. We knew we were going to stand out, and it was like, it felt really awesome to do that. And to know that people were going to be like, it's not just riffs and there's a lot more, you know, there's a lot more than just doom metal going on with this band. So it's exciting for us. And a lot of the stuff that we write is particularly the stuff that I come up with. I wouldn't be confident enough in myself to write a Caius type record or a Sabbath-y record. Cause I'm just too scatterbrained as far as influences go. And, I'll just talk about one band since Neil Peart just died. Rush has always been my favorite band, biggest influence, made me want to play bass, made me want to be in a band, made me want to write songs. Most important band to me by far ever. And they were also crazy diverse and crazy, you know, out there and would try anything. And that's always sort of been my, my guiding light as far as, well, would they do that? Or, you know, would they approve this or whatever? And it's
WWRD.
It served me well as a guiding light, as a lodestar. I think that's a pretty good segue into saying that when we added Jake to the band about a year ago, we thought this was like one of the only people that we knew that kind of had a similar aesthetic and a similar anything goes repertoire in the bands that he'd been in and the kinds of music that he would play and the stuff he would throw in with different kinds of, you know, different riffs, different kinds of solos and the bands that we had seen him playing in for years. And so, you know, I feel like that's a good segue into asking Jake about his influences.
So for me, I mean, like when I first started getting into guitar, you know, like it's the obligatory like Zeppelin kind of Sabbath stuff. Like when you're a young kid, like I always gravitated towards Jimmy Page as like an influence in the early years when I was just learning how to play guitar. But then I started getting more into like noise rock and garage rock. And then eventually I like discovered the Mars Volta when I was a teenager. And then I was like, what the hell is this? And then I found out about bands like King Crimson and stuff like that. And I'd say if I had to pick like one major influence, it would be King Crimson, just because they have so many different eras of music, you know, like they, like across their whole career, they have like a lot of lineup changes and they have like heavy metal records. They have like new wave albums that they made in the 80s. And like the thing so, about Robert Fripp is that like
a refusal to be pinned down to a single type of you know, single genre of
yeah
music.
Exactly, like, and it transcends like multiple like genres, you know. It's just like with just like his ideology on how he plays the guitar and like how he pushes his music forward, and he doesn't stick to any conventions, because like a lot of people get kind of stuck in songwriting conventions, and then like you just have to have this moment where you realize that you don't have to stick to any of that. And he's always like pushed the envelope as far as that goes, you know.
Right. I was lucky enough to see them last year.
Yeah, we saw them too.
We saw them as a band field trip recently last year in DC.
Super good.
Yeah.
I think all of our minds were blown.
Because growing up as a teenager listening to them, I never thought that I'd get the chance to see them like on stage. And like it just, they only left out one song that I wanted to hear. It was amazing, you know.
But it's interesting, you know, a lot of people probably just were like, oh, King Crimson just needs to sound like that first record, and if it doesn't sound like that first record, we're probably not going to be into it. But I don't think their intentions were ever to just make the same record over and over.
Never.
Be like, feeling like this.
I cancel the band every couple of years and just like get new people to play, because he's like, okay, like this is getting stagnant now. We're going to do something else. And people hate working with him.
Because he's a wacky dude.
Yeah. And he's just like a cantankerous old man now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He sits in his chair. Like
he's like, he succeeded Ginger Baker. He's going to be like the new difficult to work with guy.
Oh, right. Yeah, R.I.P.
Well,
yeah.
Fripp's not beating anyone up with a cane or anything.
he's playing guitar. He's just chilling out.
He's just playing guitar and being very specific about his aesthetic.
Yeah.
He probably looks at people very intensely. He probably
wants to beat them with a cane, but maybe doesn't actually.
I think Fripp's just a very, very serious person, and Ginger Baker was an asshole. There's a big difference.
It is weird seeing him like the way he performs, like you're saying, sitting though, because I'm like, he's gonna just wheel away. He's just Professor X. But then he got up and walked away, and I was like, all right. It's just, it was cool, but it's just kind of, it throws you off when it's happening.
He definitely seems like has like a Bond villain vibe to him back there.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Apparently, he only played one show where he stood up in the very beginning, and he said that it just felt weird, and he sat down ever since.
he was like, damn, that's too heavy.
Yeah, I mean, he plays a Les Paul custom. It weighs like 11 pounds.
Speaking of King Crimson, so like, I think I'm getting ahead of myself, but Jake is pretty sure that he saw Adrian Belew.
No, it was Jacko, the singer.
Or Jacko, right, because Belew wasn't with them.
We did see Adrian Belew.
That's a good tour story.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were in Canada, and I passed the singer of the King Crimson band on the street, and I did like a double take. And I later found out that it was him because they were in the city the same day that we were, because they posted on their Facebook. And I swear to God, it was him, and I didn't get a picture with him or anything.
It's funny because Jake told us that, like, you know, because we all kind of separated for the day and sort of did our own thing. And then, you know, when we all got back together, he was like, I'm pretty sure I saw Jocko. We were like, yeah, right. Okay. What are the chances of that? Like, I'm sure they're not even here. And then we found out like 2 days later, like, oh my gosh, they were in Montreal that day. It probably was him.
Yeah. Not only were they in Montreal, they were like, we're here 4 days early before our gig and we're all going out, walking around town, like, we're all out and about today. So it was almost certainly him.
Just been any other French Canadian guy. Not to dash your hopes. It probably was him, though. I believe that.
Heard him talking in a British accent.
Okay, all right, well, there you go.
We made eye contact too. He knew that I knew something, and like and he just walked by, you know what I mean?
Well, and we actually took a like a little 5-day break from the biggest, like, first chunk of our tour, literally so that we could come back here to DC to see King Crimson.
That was like built into the tour.
Yeah. And then and then this Montreal show was like maybe a couple of weeks after that. So the timeline is very very funny.
I was like, when I left the play one time and I just like saw Jeff Foxworthy, we just stared at each other.
Oh, that's awesome.
For like, it was like maybe 3 seconds, but it felt like an eternity. And I was like, I have nothing to say to you.
And I just kept walking. Asked him if he's smarter than a fifth grader.
He probably would have just been like, shut the fuck up. Leave me alone. You were saying, that was the fun tour story.
That's a tour story. I remember that you said, you know, you might ask us about those. Before I forgot that one, I wanted to just get it out there.
That's a good one. That's pretty funny. It's just because, like, the chances of it being actually happening are, like, slim. But you hit it. You hit that slight chance.
Yeah.
When did you guys kick off the band? Like, what was the origin of it?
It was in 2005. Francis and I were attending the same university, William and Mary in Williamsburg, Virginia. Mm-hmm. And Michael, so our original guitar player, Michael, was also there. And so Francis and Michael kind of just started playing together, and they asked some drummers if, they're whispering and I'm sort of getting distracted. They asked some drummers, like friends that were drummers, if, you know, if they wanted to be the drummer in the band. And turns out, you know, they couldn't really play the drums. They could play like a little beat or like, I don't know, anything. So I joined after that.
So you guys have been like kicking it for like 15 years. That's pretty crazy. I have to ask, like, what's the origin of the name? Because I don't know, because I didn't do enough research tonight.
The origin of the name is just not interesting at all. It's just an alliterative. I just like the combination of the words.
Okay.
I always thought, and the original guitar player, Michael, and I did think that the person, Giacomo Casanova from Renaissance Italy, was a pretty fascinating person. And it's pretty incredible that your life could be so adulterous and scandalous that your last name just becomes shorthand for like being a seducer. I mean, I think that's an insane legacy to leave on the English language. So that word's always fascinated me for that reason. And then caustic is just it just sounds cool. And I like it more and more as the years go by. I think it's a cool band name.
It stands out. Like, I remember seeing you guys on the bill, and I was like, what? I'm like, I wonder what this band is going to be like. And then I was like, all right, let's switch it up. Okay, so first record dropped now in 2008, or am I off by?
Yeah. So, I mean, we had, when we were at William & Mary, we had several records that we made, you know, like on an 8-track in our dorm room. So we did a few of those that aren't like around anywhere. I don't know if those copies of those exist anywhere.
I don't think we even have copies ourselves.
But it was a lot of original music. It was like 3 records worth of original music of, you know, 3 kids trying to figure it out on our own. The first thing that's available online came out in 2008. Yeah. Imminent Eminence.
And we still have copies of the CD, I think, right?
Yeah, well, there are copies of those, of that kicking around, yeah.
Which I was just listening to recently, actually.
It's pretty raw. It's pretty raw.
It has really good ideas on it.
It's definitely different than your most recent release.
It's definitely, you know, a little poppier, a little obviously lighter. It's not nearly as tight. Like, it's certainly not up to our standards of tightness in terms of a recording now. But, you know, like Francis said, we were basically kids when we did that. You know, that was 12 years ago. And but it's got some really good ideas on it, and it has really good songs. So yeah, it's and it's still available. Sometimes people ask for our entire discography.
Does that title have any does that like album artwork have any significance to it, or did you find it just kind of humorous?
I think that's the picture, right? Yeah. Of us holding the picket signs. I think that was actually Michael, our original guitar player's idea to do that. Just iconic DC landmarks. And I don't know if there's more.
No, there's not really. Not really much to it. It's just funny. I mean, I don't think we'd ever. I'd never thought of that idea or like seen anything like that. It's still funny to me. You know, a band protesting themselves. I don't know. I think that's funny. Be funnier now, honestly.
You're wishing you had like the pigeons on the first record. Although I love this record cover for God oh my God, it's so many syllables. God, how I envy the deaf. I remember just, and I think I was talking to you, Steph, about it. I was like, wow, your artwork is just like, it's out there. Like, it really grabs it.
I think that's kind of what we were hoping for, and it certainly has delivered that. A lot of confusion, a lot of shock, a lot of, wow, this is really cool. What does it mean? But it's, you know, I have never seen another album cover that really looks like that. It immediately grabs your attention. It's
very striking, yeah.
Well, it also stands out against, like, the sea of, you know...
Black album covers.
Yeah, like black album covers. Hooded figures, smoke, all that stuff, which, like, I love, but it's also... Again, to you guys' credit and success, like how you stand out against the rest in a very cool way. Who is the artist, by the way?
His name is Jace Harper, and he lives in Australia. We've been working with him for a very, very long time, over 10 years probably, right? I don't even really remember how exactly we found him. I know we found him online somehow. And asked him to do like a poster for us. We had seen his art and liked it. Asked him to do something and he said yes. And he has been doing most of our art ever since. I mean, we love his art. He's a dream to work with. So some artists can be very difficult to work with, and he is like always understands what we mean, gets back to us quickly, just is amazing to work with. Really good at communicating. Most importantly, his art is great.
Cool. So, yeah.
Jace Harper, that's his name.
Jace Harper. Jace?
J-A-S-E, yeah.
Okay, I'm just writing that down.
Yeah, he's really easy to find online. I think his website's called The Cat's Crown, but he does tons of stuff in Australia. He does a lot of big bands, tour posters and art, and he does animation, and he's just a really cool dude.
Would Caustic Casanova ever go over to Australia? I mean, maybe not right now, but...
We would love to.
If we had the opportunity, we would absolutely jump on that.
Yes. We got to go to Europe first, but, you know...
Australia is on the bucket list.
Australia, we'll definitely do it.
So you guys have only toured the States and Canada at this point, right?
Yes.
Okay, so now, so you've been traveling around. Have you seen all 50 states?
Not quite. Alaska and Hawaii are a little difficult to get to, although also bucket list states. We have actually played in, I want to say, 40 or 41 or 42 at this point.
You all have, but I have not.
Yeah, Francis and I, and Andrew probably too. Yeah, so, you know, we're getting there. We're creeping up on 50. We'd certainly like to, at some point, cross all 50 states off the list.
That would be cool. Where has touring taken you? What are some standout moments for you since as you guys have been touring?
I don't know. I feel like before I had toured with this band, I'd only seen a few states here and there, but like I'd say I'm up in the 30s now, maybe.
Yeah, I think you've probably played in 30 states.
It's just been like so amazing because like I just lived in Pennsylvania for my whole life, and then all of a sudden I saw the whole country in 2 months. And it was just such a beautiful, like, life-changing experience.
I mean, can I be honest with you? Pennsylvania is, like, pretty boring.
Yeah, it's really, especially, like, where I come from in Pennsylvania. I grew up in the middle of nowhere. I mean, it's, like, it's beautiful where I grew up. But, I mean, there's definitely not a lot of music happening there. So, pretty lucky to have like, gotten out there and actually done it, you know.
I remember for me in 2013, sorry to cut you off.
No, no, it's okay. Like, go ahead.
The first cross-country tour that Costa Casanova ever went on was my first time, like, driving out west. And I had never seen a lot of those, like, amazing, expansive western landscapes, like, you know, in parts of Colorado, Utah, Arizona, New Mexico. And I just remember my mind being completely blown, and it was just such a shock that this is part of our country. Like, these landscapes are in our country and not, like, on another planet.
Yeah, like New Mexico or, like...
Yeah, New Mexico is so beautiful.
And I always, ever since then, like, it's definitely one of my favorite parts of the country. I always look forward to going to the Southwest.
It's addicting doing that, like, touring. Like,
it's just so cool to see different parts of the country and get to know, like, you know, regional culture, regional cuisines, you know, different landscapes. It's just, it's so eye-opening, and it's, like, it's so fun. For me, probably for all of us, it's, like, definitely one of my favorite things about touring.
Southwest is great. I was just there for Christmas, and Arizona is such an awesome state to just,
I love Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
Where were you at?
So previously I had been in Flagstaff, and then last year I was in Tucson. Two very different environments.
Very different sides of Arizona. Yeah.
Yeah, Tucson's great.
You were asking about like highlights, and it's funny you mentioned Tucson because probably I would say my favorite venue we've ever played is in Tucson, the Club Congress. We got to play there three times, I think.
I think just
maybe twice. Just twice. Like twice. We got in 2015. We played with Kailessa there.
Oh, and, awesome!
As we played a bunch of shows with them because we were on their old label, and Club Congress. I don't know if you had been there over Christmas or whatever, but it's one of the oldest, most historic hotels in the Southwest. And it's where the Dillinger Four.
Unfortunately, the parents weren't like, "Yeah, let's go to a ripping show."
Well, no, it's funny because it's a really bizarre place. So it's a super old historic hotel. It's where the Dillinger Four were caught.
Hotel.
Oh, okay.
It's super awesome, and it's really weird because it's where like rich people will go on vacation and they'll stay there. But it also has a venue inside of it that hosts like Kailessa or the Melvins or whoever, you know. It's a large room. You're going to a show, you're playing a show in a old, historic, beautiful hotel restored like it's 1910 or whatever. And it's just the coolest place. And we got to headline there the next year, and they put you up in a room for the night, and it's just a very old hotel. It's just awesome. Everything about it's cool.
That sounds very cool.
Next time you're there, definitely check it out, even if there's not a show there. Yeah. Just get a drink there.
I mean, it's right downtown. Their food is really good, too, and they have good drinks and everything. Yeah, I second that opinion. That's honestly probably my favorite venue that we've ever played. That and St. Vitus in New York.
Yeah, St. Vitus is so fucking cool. That's definitely my favorite.
Vitus is amazing.
I mean, Vitus and then this place called Que Sera in Long Beach, California. Those are like my two favorite venues I've ever played on this, like with this band for sure.
Vitus gets a lot of talk on this show just because.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, its reputation precedes it, you know? It's just, it's so cool.
Yeah, I'm there an unhealthy amount of times, but honestly, I'm sure there's people that go more than me. But it's like, you know, they're just, it's just a great spot. You know, they, we call it the Mecca.
Yeah, it's a well deserved name.
What's that Paul McCartney story you have about that?
Just, well, Paul McCartney played at Vitus one time. Yeah,
that's nuts to me. Like,
who?
Paul McCartney did a secret show there after Nirvana was inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Oh, yes. I remember reading about, like, just the strange... Yeah, what a bizarre night that was. The article about that is very, very interesting.
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. It's a really, really long article, like a retrospective about Vitus and, like, that night particularly gets a lot of play in it.
Yeah, I will definitely have to check that place out the next time we go out there. Your record last year got a lot of attention and... I saw it all over the place and probably got to hear some of it, you know, live in person. But are you guys working on anything now or are you just taking some time to sort of like recover from all that and then jump
back?
We're
definitely working on new music. We have quite a bit of it.
We've been working on stuff for a year already. So like we've been working on stuff that isn't on God, How I Envy the Deaf since before Jake joined. So over a year at this point.
Cool. Like thinking like Split or something like that, EP.
It'll record. Just be on the new record.
Just on the new record when it comes out.
We're always like working way ahead. So
we've already recorded basically half of an entire new full length that we hope will be out early 2021.
That would be really cool. Just to see you guys now. How did you get involved with Magnetic Eye? Did he reach out to you? I'm forgetting his name at the moment. How did that all happen?
There's Mike Vitale.
Mike Vitale.
It's his label. I guess he started it, but his partner is Jad Schickler. And we had known the label. We had been fans of the label and the bands that were on it and all their releases for a while. And, you know, before God, How I Envy the Deaf came out, like well before it came out, Francis and I basically were just like, okay, you know, we want some support. We want some help putting this out. Let's think of a list of labels that that we like, that we would be think we'd be a good fit on, that would be happy to be on. And Magnetic Eye was like pretty high on that list. So basically, you know, we just compiled that list and sort of sent out messages. You know, and we had the raw tracks, but they weren't raw. I think they were mixed and fully mastered. And then I had reached out to Jad. I knew him. We were Facebook friends and I had been chatting with him about some of the bands on the label. And, you know, we kind of had a little correspondence going back and forth. And so I told him, you know, hey, we're kind of interested in Magnetic Eye, you know, how should I sort of go about this? And, you know, he said, just email Mike. And we did, and they were interested.
That's awesome. I actually just realized that Mike followed me on Instagram today.
Ah, yes.
Infamous. Was it Black Electric 666?
The infamous. Mm-hmm. Well, he has his own MM Vitale. And anyway, I'm not gonna put his social media stuff on blast, but.
Yeah. Well, I mean, good on him. I thought that was, you know, I think you guys do, like I keep saying you stand out, but like you really do. You really stand out against everyone else, and it's really cool. I'm really happy he like gave you guys that shot, and I'm really excited to hear any other like what else you guys are going to be putting out in the future. Do you have any you were talking about your favorite venues before too. Do you have any specific shows that stand out in mind that were really memorable for you, and they didn't specifically happen at those venues?
Well, I was going to say Day of Doom, but I guess that doesn't really count.
Oh, it counts.
That was great. We all had an amazing time there.
I mean, go ahead, Jake.
Okay. My favorite venue/show that we probably did on this whole cycle of touring was we played in Portland, Oregon on a Tuesday. and we played this place called the Tonic Lounge.
Oh, yeah. It's not there anymore.
It's a super awesome place, and apparently it was closing down, and we were, like, one of the last shows that they had at this venue, and it was Tuesday?
Heavy Tuesday.
So it was $2 PBR, two bands, and $2 admission fee. So, like...
And, like, two steaks for $10 or something?
Yeah, and we played on a Tuesday night on tour in Portland, and there was, like, 80 people in the audience. And, like, we had a full two-hour sound check.
It was great. Like, it was fantastic.
And we hung out with one of our, like, dearest friends, Dustin Davis, who actually, like, comes from our town and moved back out to Portland there. So it was just, like, a really good experience being able to see Portland and play such an awesome show on a weekday on tour. You know what I mean? Because that's a lot to ask for on any day. It's, like, 80 people. You know what I mean? But, like, on a Tuesday especially, that just kind of, like, blows your mind. You know what I mean? Because... sometimes you play shows on Saturdays on tour and there's like two people in the audience. You know what I mean?
And we just got sent the audio and video from that show like an hour before we got on the phone with you. Somebody had taped the whole thing. So we're looking forward to checking that out later.
Cool.
Oh, that's great.
Do you have one, Francis?
No, I was just going to shout out Atlas Brew Works here in DC. We've had a lot of our best shows there. That's sort of where we had our last two release shows, and it's such a fantastic place for heavy music in Washington, and it's such a great home for the community in Washington, and we're just so spoiled to have it. And Will Cook and Hassan do such a great job booking a lot of shows there and bringing a lot of fantastic talent. We got to open for Bong Ripper there a couple summers ago.
Yeah,
sold out
awesome.
Show. That was an incredible experience.
Just like being a DC native band, does that have any impact on your music?
I don't think so, really. People sometimes compare us to, you know, bands that have come out of here, but I think it's really easy to do that just because we're from here, you know, and obviously the iconic, you know, 80s and 90s sort of DIY sound that came out of DC is like super important for music in general. And I think a lot of people draw parallels because of that, but I would not say that we're directly influenced by, like, you know, Bad Brains or Minor Threat or any of those bands, to be honest.
But to the extent that where you're from or where you live or where you practice always influences you to a certain extent, and the people you're around always influences you. So I mean, on some level, yeah, absolutely yes. But if we're, you know, being honest, like 80s DC hardcore, while we recognize its importance, isn't a huge influence on us sonically. Though I won't speak for Andrew, who is not here, because I know that stuff's really, really important to him. More important in terms of his songwriting than it is in the rest of ours. But then again, his style influences our style. So
there's not as much heavy music, it seems like, kind of like floating around the top in DC. A lot more like I guess alternative, like indie rock. And
also, I mean, one thing that's definitely been to me, one thing that's definitely struck me over the years being around here is that the DIY aesthetic is really important. And it's just taken for granted here, all ages shows, and that you should do it yourself and get out there and do what you want on your terms. That's been a big influence on me particularly. I mean, especially when you go to other towns and hear about nothing's going on here, or, you know, everything's pay to play, or, you know, there's one gatekeeper who keeps everything, you know, apart from, you know, all these genres are separate and everything. Like, that's never really been an issue here. So in that way, we're spoiled because that's just the default that we've always known.
Yeah. So like what I said earlier, I kind of was talking more so about the music, but in terms of the DIY ethos, I think, yeah, we definitely take from that. And that has certainly informed the way that Costa Casanova has progressed.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was getting at, because I didn't think you guys drew too much from like the DC hardcore, like the Maryland doom scene or whatever, as much. But definitely, like you said, the DIY aspect of those bands. Like, I don't know. I guess it's not like a sonic influence, but maybe more of like a you're taking the ethic. That's what I was looking for.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we've always, like, we've never had a booking agent. We've always booked our own shows. We've always, like, been our own manager. you know, we just kind of have compiled lists of venues, promoters, and bands from across the country just from years and years and years of doing it ourselves. And I think it has made us just a lot smarter, and we've learned a lot about the music industry and the way that it operates, having done it ourselves. And that's nothing but a big advantage.
I guess we'll sort of be somewhat wrapping up, but do you guys, are there any bands that you're scoping out right now, whether they be old or new, that you're really digging on, that if you wanted to talk about them and maybe hip the listeners to, or even if it's just like an old classic or something, anything of that nature that you guys have been really into lately?
Yeah, definitely. One of my favorites is Errata. They're from Greensboro, North Carolina. They were actually on our old label, Retro Futurist Records, that was owned by Kailasa. We kind of mentioned that earlier. They are just incredible. A blend of doom, prog, sludge, just a heavy, really super unique heavy rock band. Kind of like us, but they sound nothing like us, just in terms of like ethos and just, you know, general idea about what you want your band to be. If you like Costa Casanova, chances are you'd probably like Errata.
I've definitely heard of Errata. I just, I have not given them the time of day, but I will add them to my piece of paper. My piece of paper that's running out of room very quickly.
Yeah, they're incredible. They're also incredible humans, and they're just great buddies of ours. Maybe Fran can add one.
Well, I was just thinking, like, if I narrow it down to two, there are two bands on this recent run of touring that we got to play their release shows for. Husbandry out of New York, who are amazing. And we played with them at Gold Sounds for their album release show for A Port in a Storm. That was super, super amazing night, and such an honor to be on tour and play someone's release show. They are, you know, a Mars Volta influenced prog metal noise rock band that are amazing. And then our label mates, Ghastly Sound from Burlington, Vermont, who are just bass, drums, and vocals, and sound like bigger than a lot of five piece bands that I know. And we got to play their release show for their album, Have a Nice Day, out on Magnetic Eye Records on the tour. And that was one of the best nights of the tour. One of my favorite nights, in a long time that we've played. So definitely I would check out Ghastly Sound and Husbandry.
I've been digging on Ghastly Sound for a while. I was really stoked that I got to see them on Day of Doom. It was cool to see them. They do a lot with not, like you said, do a lot. I don't want to say a little, because is it TJ, his fucking like pedal board?
Yeah, I mean, he's quite a sonic, a sonic master. I mean, he's got all that stuff really, really fine-tuned. I mean, the way that he sounds like, honestly, a bass player and two guitarists combined is
quite impressive.
It's alchemy. I don't get it. I don't understand it.
And then I think Jake's trying to think of Netherlands, right?
Netherlands are good, but a band that really stuck out to me when we were touring, we played in Chicago with this band called Huntsman. That was like this blend of like 70s Americana hard rock and like doom and black metal. I don't know. It's like if Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young got together with like Sleep and Bathory. I don't know. They're
great. We all really like.
I never saw a band do like a doom band do 3-part vocal harmonies on stage. You know, like it's. That was a really good show for sure. And also, that was the night that we all did shots of Malort.
Malort.
Oh, yeah.
Tastes like that, rotten grapefruit.
Shoe polish.
Kerosene, shoe polish, and toothpaste combined. Delicious.
I haven't tried it yet, and you haven't sold me on it, which means I'm still going to do it.
You know, it's weird. It's like, I'd say most people hate it, but then some of those people grow to actually really like it and maybe even love it. And I realize it's like, if you're not from Chicago or if you've never heard of it, it's like a novelty shot to take and, you know, there or any place that has it in the surrounding areas. But I have actually kind of grown to like it. It's super unique. Nothing tastes quite like it out there. And so I really enjoy that aspect of it. I don't know that I could mix it in a cocktail, but just on its own, I actually kind of like it.
It'll happen one day. I'll get back out to Chicago and give it a whirl.
Cool. Although, take a video of it and send it to us.
Okay. I definitely will do that.
I'd love your first impression.
I will. I'll do an Instagram live of it.
Yeah.
Diary of Doom does Malort shots.
Yeah. Perfect.
So, all right. Well, I think that will just about wrap it up. Plug your stuff.
Well, you can find us on all the social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Most of our music is streaming on Spotify, iTunes, basically anywhere that it's streaming. Our new record, God, How I Envy the Deaf, came out October 18th on Magnetic Eye Records. And you should pick up a copy.
And our next show is March 4th here in Washington, D.C. at Songbird. With A Deer Horse,
a New York band
from New York, who are awesome, and Ven Ray,
a DC band.
We might even play a new song at that show.
Or two.
Oh.
Or two.
Right. So
brand new, brand spanking new.
Yeah, there's one, I think, 7 or 8 minute long song that's brand new that we played on this entire tour, this most recent tour of the summer and fall, that hasn't been recorded yet, that will be on the new record. So we're already out there playing new music, and we kind of, in the last 2 weeks, have written another song and that we demoed today. So that was exciting. And so we might play up to 2 new songs at this show.
Up to 2 new songs. Minimum 1.
Minimum 1, maximum 2.
actually, that does remind me, like, last question. Do you guys have any, like, dream tour lineup that you'd want to be on?
As far as a lineup, I mean, I would love to tour with Melvins and Queens of the Stone Age. I think not necessarily together, but together would be awesome. I think all of us probably share those two.
Yeah. I mean, that would just be like
too much. Be too much for my heart to handle, honestly.
That would just be like the best for like that would just be a win-win for everyone in the band, I think. Yeah.
What about Ty Siegel, Jake?
I like Ty Siegel. I would tour with him.
Yes, we would tour with Ty Siegel. If you're listening, Ty, we would
Ty.
Tour.
Ty Siegel actually came through. I work at the 930 Club, and I know that we're kind of wrapping up and we don't have that much time, but I work at the 930 fine. Club in DC, and honestly, one of the more memorable shows that I've ever worked was Ty Siegel solo.
Acoustic, right?
Yeah, solo acoustic. It was a great show. I love Ty Siegel, but he got catering for, like, you know, the crew, but also, like, everybody that worked there. So, like, I literally showed up to work, and I was, like, I'm not even exaggerating, handed 2 crab cakes and some oysters and told to, like, make a plate. So that was super cool. Not only that, he just seemed like an incredibly awesome guy from the stage.
I've seen him 3 times, and I've met him. He's a really, really nice person. You know, very prolific, obviously. I mean, yeah, very, very nice guy. Humble guy.
You hear that, Ty? You got some fans here.
Costa Casanova.
Hey,
hit us up.
Hit us
up, Ty Siegel.
Rewind the podcast. Get the social media.
I know this probably sounds so planned, but it's really not.
Dylan has our Skype.
Yeah, I've got the Skype. You can message me, and then you can do an episode of the podcast, and then I'll give you their reach out.
Yeah. All right. Cool.
That's really cool that you used to work at the 930 Club.
I work there. It's an awesome place to work. I love it. I've been turned on to, like, so many awesome bands. Recently, the Budos band that I heard on tour, actually, for the first time. They came through. They played a couple nights ago, and that they are incredible.
Another part of this podcast is just continually adding to the list of bands that I will probably not be able to listen to before I die. But it's just like, for me, it's just a constant library of learning about bands and other. And that's one thing I like about this genre is that the umbrella spreads very wide in terms of the musical spectrum.
Yeah, for sure.
So I think that will do it for this chapter of the diary. I'd like to thank Caustic Casanova, Francis, Steph, and Jake for coming on tonight and talking all about all their stuff. It was a real pleasure.
Thank you so much, Dylan. We had a blast.
Yes, thank you, Dylan.
And hopefully you guys come back to New York soon. Definitely want to see you guys again, wherever you may roll through.
We will.
Until then, we'll just keep you posted on all that. So thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you so much, Dylan.